Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 5, Text 25. What did we talk about yesterday? So long ago. What was it? Yes?
Krishna felt something incomplete, and the reason for the feeling for the incompleteness, and basically Krishna wanted to create a facility for the living entities to come to the perfected stage.
The conditioned living entities, yeah. Yeah, good. And in that space or the period of time, what existed? What was there at that time?
Only Krishna existed before the creation, and everything else is non-manifested state now.
Yeah. He's referred to, it's important, it comes up a few times, but it's in a theological presentation, it's important also. He's referred to as the seer, drashta. Seer implies certain things. Seer implies cognizance, or consciousness. And implicit is there's something seen. That means there's two, seer and the seen. There's three, it's the process of seeing. But in this case, there's just the seer. There isn't the seen. And there's a process, but it's not being applied to anything because there's nothing manifest, at least nothing on the material side manifest. And within the purport, another consideration is being presented, and that is, while he's the seer and there isn't the seen as far as the material creation is concerned, there's the spiritual creation, and the Lord is within that spiritual creation. His internal potency is active. So he's feeling, these different terms are used, incomplete, imperfect is the translation of the verse, feeling compassion. So preceding creation is those feelings of the Lord. So there's a purpose behind creation. So this morning's verse, it's a short verse, but we'll, in a short purport, but we'll spend some time with it. The Lord is the seer, and the external energy which is seen works as both cause and effect in the cosmic manifestation. So here's where we're going to lose some people, because it starts getting philosophical. Oh, greatly fortunate Vidura, this external energy is known as Maya, or illusion. And although her agency, and through her agency only, is the entire material manifestation made possible. Hmm. So matter is the cause of creation, right? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The material nature, known as Maya, is both the material and efficient cause of the cosmos. So we just lost everybody with that sentence. What does that mean? Material and efficient cause. We're not used to speaking in those terms, so we'll spend a little time with that. But in the background, the Lord is the consciousness for all activities. Seer implies consciousness. So he's the consciousness behind, in the background, for all activities. As in the individual body, the consciousness is the source of all energies of the body, so the supreme consciousness of the Lord is the source of all energies in material nature. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.10 as follows. 9.10 is Mayadhyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharasharam Hetunani Nukonteya Jagati Parivartita. You know the verse? And Prabhupada translates it here quite differently than he does in Bhagavad Gita as it is, but it's appropriate for the reference, the context. Quote, throughout all the energies of material nature, there is the hand of the Supreme Lord as the final superintendent. Due to this supreme cause only, all the activities of material nature appear planned and systematic, and all things regularly evolve. Quite different. End of purport. Any questions? Let's see if we can unpack this a little bit. The topic is creation, and there are different players or factors in creation, or there's different factors of action, because creation is one type of action. So we know this verse from Bhagavad Gita, Janma karma chame devyam evam yoveti tatvataha chaktva deham punar janma naiti mameti sorjana. There's a transcendental nature of Krishna's activities, and one of his activities, besides Rasa Lila, those things that everybody knows, there is creation as a transcendental activity also, even though it's involving the external energy. It's a transcendental activity. So transcendental activity partly implies, from Krishna's side, he's not involved with or implicated by the modes of nature. He's transcendental. So, saying the same thing differently, it all happens by remote control. He never comes in direct contact with material nature. It's by his will things happen, and the energies that he wills, they move because they're his servants. They want to move according to his will. So he's willing something. We heard this yesterday. He's willing out of compassion that there's a place where rebellious souls can go and become rectified of that rebellious nature and become again situated in their happy, blissful, joyful spiritual nature and return to the spiritual realm. So he's willing out of compassion for that to happen. And when he wills, things start to happen. So one of the things that starts to happen is the unseen, the material nature, becomes activated just by his will. And then he's describing what that role of material nature is. And the Sanskrit is Shakti Sad Asad Atmika. So Shakti is referring to the Maya Shakti, material energy. Sad Asad Atmika, cause and effect, is one way he's translating it in the verse. Then in the purport, it's material and efficient cause. It's kind of like, you know, doing a U-turn, you're going this way, and everything's very clear, and all of a sudden you're going the other way. What's this material and efficient cause thing? It's, we'll go Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, undergraduate, graduate, postgraduate. So, in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text 14, Krishna says, somebody has Bhagavad Gita, Nakartritvam Nakarmani. You know the verse?
Akartritvam Nakarmani, Lokasya
Srijate Prabhu,
Nakarmaphala Sangosvam, Mate Sangosva Nakarmani.
And the meaning is? Paraphrase? What is karta? What does karta mean? Being the doer. Never consider yourself to be the doer of activities. Then this, what's the next one? Nakartritvam na karmani lokasya srijate pravo.
Something that the master,
Yeah. Na karma pala. Don't consider yourself to be the cause of the fruits of work, nor consider yourself to be causing others to work. But svabhavas tu pravartate. Pravartate means it comes into being, or it happens. So material nature is this, how Prabhupada is, the modes of material nature specifically is svabhava. So what is that svabhava? We find that word svabhava also in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is describing the activities for the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. What's the first one? The qualities or the activities of a Brahmana? How does it begin? Who knows? Samadhamaktapakshocham Shantir Arjavam Evacha Gyanam Vigyanam Astakyam Brahma Karma Svabhava. There it is, Svabhava. Brahma Karma Svabhavajam, Kshatriya Karma Svabhavajam, Vaishya Karma Svabhavajam, Shudra Karma Svabhavajam. Svabhava. What's Svabhava? It's the modes of nature. According to that, a particular mode of nature that brings about Sama, Dhamma, Tapak, Shocham, the quality of goodness. From the quality of goodness comes actions in the quality of goodness. And behind the action in the quality of goodness is the impetus of the pushing of, the impelling force of the quality of goodness. Swabhava. So, swabhava is causing action, swabhava is causing the fruit of action, and swabhava is inducing others to act. All this is being carried out by material nature. So we're like going along for a ride. Get in your car and zoom, zoom, off you go. And you're just sitting there and you're going 60 miles an hour. Zoom, zoom, down the highway. You're not like, you know, running or working hard, just, you know, pushing pedals. Zoom, zoom. Being carried by a machine. We're being carried by the machine, a material nature. And the material nature has different modes. You know, there's little, the little baby little cars and big long cars and fast cars and sports cars and SUVs and, you know, cargo vans and big trucks, and there's all kinds of vehicles. So there's, according to the swabhava, the modes of nature, we have different embodiments, and according to that embodiment, things happen. There's impetus from the modes of nature. So that's a causal principle. Things happen because material nature impels us to act. And we're being warned or instructed by Krishna not to think that we're doing it. Well, gee, that's really contrary to how we think all the time. Because we think, I'm going to do it. Kartaham iti manyate. There's a pile of rocks. And the pile of rocks has to move over to there. So I have to go do it, pick up the rocks one by one or put them in some thing and carry them over there. That's our experience. So we have some role in all of this, but it's not the role of being the cause. But now, again, in the language of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text number 14, we're one of five factors. Chapter 18, text number 14. We're called in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, or identified as Karta. There's Adishta, that's, you know, the place. Shta, when you see that phrase, Sta, means being situated. Adishta, so that's the body, the place. And Karta. Karta means doer. Or the worker is how Prabhupada is translated here. But the doer. Karanam cha prithag vidham. Karanam. Karana means, it indicates causation, but it's in this case, it's the instrument. So our senses are instruments. If you want to pick up the rocks to move them over from here to there, you have to have instruments. You know, if you don't have hands, it's pretty tough to pick them up. You need instruments. Even you exist as a doer or worker, you have to have hands, instruments, something. Then there has to be some endeavor. And then, ultimately, there has to be the sanction of the Supreme Lord. Because you can endeavor, you can have instruments, you can have, you know, a place, and you can, you know, exist and be, you know, trying to do something. But if Krishna doesn't sanction it, it won't happen. So there's five factors. The body, or place of action. The performer, or doer, or worker. The various senses. The many different kinds of endeavor, and ultimately, the supersoul. So out of all these, the supersoul is topmost. Because you can assemble all the other four, and still things don't happen. Even there's swabhava. there's an impelling force of material nature. If Krishna doesn't sanction, then things don't happen. But of course, if there's an impelling force of nature, then Krishna's apparently sanctioning, because Prakriti doesn't move without Krishna's sanction. Not a blade of grass moves in the universe without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. So, behind there's this relationship of our willing something. Let's take the example of a thief. Or we can take the example of a worshipper. Krishna speaks of the worshipper in Bhagavad Gita. He's advising, worship me alone. But he also indicates that there are those that are inimical towards me. They don't want to worship me alone. They want to worship someone who will give them a quick result, and without acknowledging me. So, recognizing they have that wish, I give them the faith and make their faith strong. So they have very strong faith. Worship this way. And tell them differently, and they'll say, no, worship, I have great faith in this worship. I get quick results. There's no persuading them otherwise. Well, wait a minute, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, no. I want to worship this way. And Krishna advises, don't disturb their faith. But we can show by example some, and offer teachings of the higher, just as Krishna does. But we don't disturb. And Krishna doesn't disturb. In fact, he supplies. To those very same people that Krishna is supplying, he's explaining, actually, avidhi purvakam. It's being done with improper knowledge. But he's giving that improper knowledge. We can't have, like the thief, we can't steal without impetus from Krishna, who says, don't steal. But then now I want to steal. So Krishna gives inspiration. Okay, here's how you can do it. Not now. Someone's coming. Okay, now's your opportunity. Go. Or another example Prabhupada gives is the cat. The cat's sitting in the kitchen, waiting for the housewife to leave the kitchen. The housewife leaves the kitchen, she jumps up on the table and starts drinking the milk. Super Soul is giving that intelligence. Because the cat can't jump on the, you know to wait until, and how to jump and how to do the whole thing. The impetus, you know, the mechanistic scientist speaks about, you know, out of material nature comes this impulse that says, create a spider web. And here's how you do it. You know, but there's no intelligence behind it. It's just the motive, just material nature. Or when a little kitten is born, the kitten knows to go to his mother. He doesn't go to kitten school. Okay, here's what you do next. He goes to mother and takes milk from the mother. Just, or the one of our acharyas, when he was contemplating should he take sannyas, he saw a little lizard fell, the egg fell, the little lizard came out of the little lizard egg, and there was a little fly, and immediately, first thing, the tongue went out. So he understood, it's built within nature. He didn't go to lizard school. He just, you know. So where did that intelligence impetus come from? Behind everything is Super Soul sanctioning the fifth factor of action. So that's Bhagavad Gita. Now we're going to Bhagavatam. And Bhagavatam is speaking that Krishna is there, or Mahavishnu, his expansion, is there, wishing that living entities have an opportunity to regain their natural position. They're in a dormant state, matter's in dormant state, everything's in a dormant state. He's not feeling lonely, he's feeling they should have this opportunity. So by that will, material nature begins to become activated. He's the seer, and now the seen, he describes, becomes the both the cause and the effect of the cosmic manifestation. The cause in the sense, not in the ultimate cause sense, but in the sense that without material nature, you're not going to have creation. In that sense, it's the cause. And then it's the effect. It's the creation. It's material nature. And it appears, because it's material nature, that's all there is. There is no hand of God. It's just material nature. And things happen. There's the technology of cause and effect of things. Like it's said in the Divine and Demoniac chapter, the demons consider there's the cause of material creation is sex life. Because from sex life comes life. So life, the cause of life is sex life. That's it. Nothing more. So, where does the spider get the impetus to build the spider web, or the lizard to take the baby lizard to take the insect and have food, and the kitten to take milk from the mother, and the birds to fly in the air, and everything? What's the plan? There's a cause and effect thing going on, for sure. But it's not just genetically coded. That's the cause. It just happens to be primordially that's the way it is. There's a cause that brings those causes and effects into being. And it's the will of the Lord and His energy. But the material energy is one of the five factors. And of those five factors, it has some causal influence over the next effect, which then becomes a cause of the next effect, and so on. There's the domino effect of material nature, the cause and effect, the push and the pull of material nature. Now, in the purport is the mention material and efficient cause. So now that's going to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 5, you'll find, if you want a postgraduate analysis of this, you can read, Chapter 6, Texts 14 and 15. Bring your dictionary with you. And there's a very involved discussion about Chapter 6 is about Advaita Acharya, and Advaita Acharya is likened to Mahavishnu, and then this language is used, this material and efficient cause, and it gets the Sanskrit terms for them, Nimitta and Upadan Maya. So it's a little technical, but there's two comparisons, just to keep it simple. One comparison is the relationship between earth and that portion of the earth which is clay and a clay pot. So the clay pot is nothing but earth or clay. So it's the effect. But then it's also the cause. Clay is the cause, because you don't have clay pots without clay. So it's the material cause and the efficient cause. So to make a clay pot, I don't know if anybody's made clay pots before, but you need a potter's wheel, you need clay, and you need hands. You can just like will it and just, okay, make a pot. And sometimes you have instruments in your hands. You know, different instruments to make different shapes of the clay pot. So you take, you know, from the big glob of pot, of clay, you take a smaller glob of clay and, you know, so that it's slippery a little bit, and you put it, and you have, first thing is you have to center it in the middle of the potter's wheel. And then with different pressure, you can, you know, bring the clay pot up. You know, with something on this side and something on that side, and you, then you can make it skinny this place and make it wider in that place, and boom, you got a clay pot. So that's a creation of a clay pot that's likened to the creation of cosmic manifestation. There's the material cause, that's the clay. And the efficient cause is the instruments. Of course, there's the instruments don't move without the doer, but there's instruments. And then there's the clay pot, the end product. So another comparison is, so there's different causal elements. Remotely, there's the sanctity of the Supreme Lord. None of those things happen. There isn't clay, there isn't a doer, a will that's then supported by the Supreme Lord, the instruments, the potter's wheel, the whole program. You don't get a clay pot without the sanction of Krishna. So the materialists want to discount the existence of Krishna, but the Bhagavatam wants us to know that you must include Krishna, because he's the cause. There's nothing without, because there isn't even something to see. What to speak of a potter's wheel or clay or anything without the wheel of Krishna. Another example is a mother producing a child. So there's the seed-giving father. Without the seed-giving father, mothers don't produce children. Wombs don't produce babies. But there's two factors that are there within the production of a child. There's the ingredients, that's the material cause, and there's the space or the chamber or upadan maya. So maya, read the Bhagavatam, the material nature known as maya is both the material and efficient cause of the cosmos. So just as a womb of a mother produces it supplies the ingredients, that's the material cause, and provides the space, that's the upadan maya and nimitta maya. And they're causal. You don't have production of children without those two things, without maya, without the ingredients and the efficient cause, the space. But you don't have, even you can have those two things. You can have the ingredients, you can have the space, but you still don't without the living entity. And then even living entities, there has to be the sanction of the Supreme Lord. So we have a role to play. Going back to Bhagavad Gita, there's five factors of action. But the purpose of the creation is not, you know, it's not going to happen without Krishna. We can't create clay pots or have children without the sanction of Krishna. It's not going to happen. So it can happen with Krishna's sanction, but then the other factors also are at play. And if any part of those other four factors is not functioning properly, the action doesn't happen. And action does happen with Krishna's will and the other factors properly aligned. So there's what's being explained is there's a causal component here of material nature. Krishna creates through the agency of material nature. And there's an efficient and there is a material cause component, which are activated by Krishna's will. So he writes, the material nature, known as Maya, is both the material and efficient causes of the cosmos, but in the background, the Lord is the consciousness for all activities. That was mentioned in the previous verse, the seer, the conscious being. Then he makes a comparison. As in bodies, there's a soul present, and because the soul is present, the body grows, and there is the capacity for consciousness because the soul is present. Similarly, within the whole cosmic manifestation, there's the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Consciousness is the source of all energies in material nature. That's different than us. You know, we're not the source of the body. But in another sense, the activating of the potential of the body is there because the soul is there. And you can have a limb that doesn't do anything if the soul isn't there. But the soul can animate the body in such a way the limb can do something with the sanction of Krishna. So the way he's writing it is, as in the individual body, the consciousness is the source of all energies of the body, or let's say the animating factor, not the source of the energies in the absolute sense, but the animating factor is the presence of the soul. So similarly, the supreme consciousness of the Lord is the source of all energies in material nature. And this is in an absolute sense. Krishna is the source of those energies. And it also means Krishna is the animating factor, because without Krishna's sanction, Maya is dormant. It's in its pradhan state within the body of Mahavishnu. And because he's desiring, it becomes animated by that desire. Now, how do you measure? What meter do you have to measure the will of the Lord? Can you hook up some meter to material nature and say, what's the will of the Lord here? Is it a 1 or a 10? There's no such meter. There's no such device. But the Bhagavatam is telling us in very clear language, matter doesn't move without Krishna's sanction. Behind it, there's his will. And behind his will is him. And then it's not just matter. There's these other factors. There is the soul. So the soul may be willing or animating some little part of it with Krishna's sanction. Behind that, even our will needs the support of Krishna. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, wishing to worship a particular demigod, or wishing to become a thief, or whatever, wishing to become a software engineer. Behind that will, it requires the support of Krishna. Otherwise, it's flat. It's like lifeless. So then, he goes back to Bhagavad Gita, and I'm almost done. He goes back to Bhagavad Gita 9:10 and gives this Maya Dakshina Prakriti. So the word in this Bhagavatam text 25 is drashta, or some drashtuhu. Drashta. Drashta means to see. And samdrashta is perfect seer. Sam means complete. Samdrashta. So Krishna is the perfect seer. And the verse previous, before there was anything to be seen, is also drashta. So that's his position, drashta. Now, in Bhagavad Gita, the different word, but similar import, Maya, Mayadhyakshena. Adhyaksha is also used in another place in Bhagavad Gita, means overseeing. The component of conscious awareness of Mayadhyakshena Prakriti. Krishna is overseeing his material nature. It's remote control. He doesn't have gears and levers and have to like work hard. He just sees. And by his seeing, things happen. Suyate Sacharacharam. Chara and Achara, the moving and non-moving beings, are all under Krishna's supervision, under the material nature. Hetu nani nu kaunteya. So, the translation that he provides in 9.14 Bhagavad Gita. What happened? 9.10 Bhagavad Gita. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and unmoving beings. Under its rule, Hetu, under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. Under its rule, so Krishna is ruling material nature is ruling or determining creation, annihilation, maintenance, in between. It's moving under there's his will. And then there's material nature that comes into being, and by his will, it creates, it maintains, it annihilates. So Krishna is supervising, upadrashta, adhyaksha, samdrashta. See, that's his position, the conscious being. And matter is not conscious, but it appears to be conscious, like, you know, I'm conscious. We're sitting in the room here, and we see one another, and hear sounds, and trucks going by, and we're conscious. And if you don't have a concept of soul or God, then what's consciousness? It's just an electrochemical event. And the synapses of the neural system, that's what it is. Don't think of it as anything other than what it is. It's just, you know, biological, physiological event, that's all. No big deal. So he translates this 9.10 Bhagavad Gita a little differently. Throughout all the energies of material nature, there is the hand of the Supreme Lord as the final superintendent. Due to this supreme cause only, so he's up here, material nature, the activities of material nature appear planned and systematic, and all things regularly evolve. So there's events, there's material nature, and there's the superintendent of material nature. Now, events are going to start to happen, creation specifically, and then sub-creation following that. And because Vidura has asked about it, Maitreya is going to explain it, how the whole system works. But he wants, as Vidura specifically inquired, he wants to stay focused on the Supreme Personality of Godhead in understanding the dimensions of creation and events of this world. And gee, wouldn't it be nice to be Krishna conscious? And so when events happen in this world, you see Krishna's hand. and you're very clear. You don't like get lost and start thinking something else. So he's doing it very slowly, step by step, so we can be Krishna conscious. Even when dealing with stuff, the you know things that go on every day in material life, it's very practical. Okay, any questions? Yes.
So in the case of a person worshipping demigod and the ultimate cause and sanction, the reason is Krishna's compassion to reclaim. But in this thief case, can you please explain more or less like how?
Well, in there's modes of nature. And there's not only one, there's multiple. There's mode of goodness. There's the mode of passion. And there's the mode of ignorance. And Krishna doesn't deprive the person in the mode of ignorance from activity. He makes their faith strong. He gives them intelligence. He's advising them otherwise in many ways. Externally and internally. But they're going, no. So he doesn't interfere with their free will. It's not his preference. And built into that program with the thief is punishment. Crime and punishment. Yeah. That's something Dostoevsky understood, crime and punishment. He may not have thought it was coming from Krishna, but it's... There's fallible justice and there's infallible justice. It's to teach the living entity to don't make crime, but come to the right position. Anything else? Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, is like, I'm not sure whether it is fully related to the topic, but I'm kind of thinking like even in the devotional service there are near and dear one, like if they're like someone not doing well, it's kind of paining to the heart. And one thing I want to know is like how should I take it, like is it a proper thing or not? And the other thing is like what should I do, like in
some what's the first way? Thing is the feeling proper, is your, yeah, that your question?
Yeah.
Well, compassion is proper. But what you should do about compassion depends upon your capacity and your position or your relationship. Like, you know, Prahlad Maharaj, he was so elevated, he directly prayed face to face with the Supreme Lord, please deliver them. Depends on your capacity and your position. It's as a Vaishnava, certainly what's appropriate is to be the well-wisher. Prahlad Maharaj was the well-wisher even of Hiranyakashipu, who tried to kill him, torture him, mutilate him. It didn't change his position. He was their well-wisher. That's Vaishnava. But we may not have such capacity, but that's the principle, to remain the well-wisher of others. The first thing he asked is, please forgive my father. Please deliver him for all the sinful, not just to me, but so many persons. He's been so cruel. Please forgive him. Please deliver him.
Guru Maharaj, so from this topic, so there is nothing called my nature. It's just, so there is nothing called my nature, like nature of particular living entity.
Yeah, there is. There is. There's a constitutional disposition to serve Krishna in one of five rasas, and then subdivisions of those.
And how does modes of nature like play on particular living creatures? I mean, how does it?
The modes of nature impel us. It does two things. It covers us and it impels us. This is in the postgraduate thing now, in Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's the covering potency and the throwing potency, and there are Sanskrit terms for it. Maya has those two features, or swabhava, or conditioned tendencies. Throws us in material nature and impels us into actions. It's part of the reason it's difficult to get out of Maya, because even if you like get a nice good theoretical understanding, there's still this impelling feature. So part of it is to get rid of the covering potency, but then there's the throwing potency. It's a 1-2 punch.
So what should be the approach to it?
What should be the approach? Follow the process that Krishna is providing in Bhagavad Gita. And that process that he's giving in Bhagavad Gita is tadvidhi. That person who wants to know, like, what's real besides this illusion, what's real? Pranipatena, praniprashnena, sevaya. That's our process. Upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshanam. Tathvadarshi can impart that knowledge unto us because he has seen the truth. So that requires some patience, and requires some faith, and requires some submission, an inquisitive spirit, and a willingness to serve. That's the recipe. Put on low heat and stir.
Talking about the five different parts of action, I had read, I think, maybe in the book Renunciation to Wisdom, a compilation of Srila Prabhupada's writings from India, and I could never re-find it, but this question I had was about, I think Prabhupada was saying somewhere, successful action, there's three different components, and one was like, an action done with full endeavor, full knowledge, and something else. So I guess specifically my question was about if you could shed any light on that, and also the...
Well, I'd like to see the reference, but I would say that the third component is Krishna's sanction. Because you endeavor by right means, so that's full component of knowledge and full component of endeavor. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, one will be successful.
So it has to be full endeavor.
Full endeavor, full knowledge, and Krishna's sanction.
Because the second part of my question was kind of, like in devotional service, the importance of, or just the understanding the degree of our endeavor. We can do some activities.
Let's take book distribution. You know, you can have days when you're distributing books and full endeavor, full conviction, it's not happening. And that's quite okay. I mean, except for the fruitive part of our consciousness. It's okay, because the full endeavor is there. Like Prabhupada described, even if no one had joined the Hare Krishna movement, you know, he was feeling, I'm fulfilling the order of my spiritual master. Carrying out the order of my spiritual master. So that therein lies detachment from the fruit, because it's not my department. Serving is my department, and outcomes is Krishna's department.
I guess that was also like the serving aspect. Like we can either try, not so much about the result, but just in our devotional service, whether we're giving 100% in an activity versus maybe we're, you know, the difference in the devotional service, whether we're going completely or maybe sometimes we're just endeavoring but not to our full extent. How does that affect our progress? And sometimes we have so many different activities, we may just go, medium, or just try to do this activity, but we're not giving everything.
Well, I would caution in the nature of what you're asking. I would caution on the side of making an endeavor in the wrong consciousness, making a full endeavor in the wrong consciousness, of I am the doer consciousness, as opposed to making a conscientious endeavor mindful of the fact that I'm fully dependent upon Krishna, I'm not the doer. I would say the latter is going to be more effective. In the short run and the long run, and in between. Far more in terms of satisfaction as well as result. The intensity of endeavor, which is where your attention is focusing on, full endeavor, resonates with passion and immature understanding of what, you know, what's the rules of the game of spiritual life. The rules of the game in spiritual life are very different than material life. In material life, it's dependent upon your full endeavor. They're like the Protestant ethic. Just, you know, keep trying and work hard. God will bless you. You've heard that before. Yeah. God's merciful. That's given. Now, how hard are you going to endeavor? That's the only variable as far as that perspective is concerned. And it's very much conducive, or it's a breeding ground for false ego. Kartaham iti manyate. I'm going to be successful proportionate to how intensely I endeavor. That's Maya. Sounds, you know, like, you know, religious, but it's Maya. As opposed to, let me make my full endeavor, my fullest endeavor, to feel completely dependent upon Krishna. You know, try it with japa. If you really want to, like, get on the other side of being in Maya, try it with japa. Because you'll learn very quickly. You know, it's not, you're not going to do it. Conquer the holy name. It's not going to happen. It's not satisfying, and it's not going to happen. But if you're making your full endeavor to feel dependent upon Krishna while you're chanting, you're in a receiving mode as opposed to a doing mode, it's a whole other experience. And then you can very easily transpose that experience to the other activities of life, you know, whatever it might be, studying in school or working in the workplace or distributing books or whatever your, you know, various applications are. It's the doership tendency is checked. And striving in a mode where you're wanting to please Krishna, you're the servant wanting to please Krishna, you're wanting Krishna's mercy, you're wanting Krishna to be pleased. Krishna consciousness happens in your bead bag, is my phrase. Then you'll understand about, you know, much better about how to do all of the things. Complete endeavor, so, you know, complete endeavor. And complete knowledge. Okay, that's part of complete endeavor, you know, in endeavor in Krishna consciousness. That's a complete endeavor. Not just the intensity of effort that you make. And that's the measure of complete endeavor. The other idea is immature and fruitive. And the other idea is mature and far more powerful. Yes?
Probably. Clarification, I think you have talked much about it, but I still have this doubt. If my understanding now is everything behind is Krishna's sanction, whatever happens, won't it not make one as
complacent?
Complacent, or, you know, fatalistic, hey, you know, everything happens.
No, not at all.
How do we take that and then...
Because you're a servant. Very simple. I'm not like, okay, la-di-da. Whatever, que sera, sera. Whatever will be. I'll just lie back in my hammock and sip lemonade and wait for it to happen. I'm Krishna's servant. I have an identity. And I'm happy to be so fortunate to have such an identity. I'm Krishna's servant. He's giving me an opportunity to serve. Even, you know, I'm covered and I'm a rascal and I'm rebellious and, you know, I have so many disqualifications. But Krishna's so kind. Or I can take it differently. In a humble manner, Krishna, please accept my service. I'm not complacent. Comfortable. Krishna, you're the ultimate doer. I'm just kind of going along for the ride. I'm your servant. And you have desires. And I want to act, although, you know, I want to be an instrument of fulfilling those desires. I want to take the fullness of my capacity to be a karta, a worker, a performer, a responsible being, and look to your desire and try to endeavor to, although I have no capacity to do so unless you bestow it upon me. I'm your servant. There's a lot to do in Krishna consciousness, in that consciousness. No complacency. It's hands-on, but we're fully dependent at the same time. It's nice. I mean, you know, kind of like, you know, we're partners with Krishna. But, you know, he's the master. We're not partners. He's the master. I'm the servant. But he's so kind. He treats me like we're partners. My dear most friend. And I love my dear most friend. I want to be with my friend and do things with my friend and see what he wants and just do what he wants. That's our relationship. I'm not complacent at all. Hanging around waiting for things to happen. Very active.
My follow-up to that is, if we do that and then if something happens, now how do we take the result? It's not fruitful, but something happens, a situation opens up. You know, how do we, once again, you know, hey,
well, there's some service. There's some purpose. I may not be clear what that purpose is. I'll seek some indication from Krishna and from scripture and the other resources Krishna has provided to understand the purpose, but there's some service here. And that's, I mean, I'm his servant. He's giving me some opportunity to serve him in some way. And I may feel like, whoa, this is really over my head. Anyway, so we have to process according to our intelligence and our capacity. In one of the sayings of Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is to describe Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, I don't have the capacity because he's unlimited. But then he uses this metaphor. A bird can fly as high in the sky as his wings permit him. And so I will describe to the best of my capacity. You know, so his service was describing Lord Chaitanya. And our service may be, as you said, we're moving along the path of life and suddenly something unfolds and I don't know what to make of this. So it's not necessary, you know, it's not crime and punishment. It's a whole other set of rules. With devotional service, it's an opportunity to serve. However, my little pea brain can't fathom what it is, but it's an opportunity to serve. So let me go on with faith that there's some service here, and how is it best for me to serve? And I stay fixed in that consciousness, and my experience is slowly, you stay fixed in that consciousness, and Krishna sends the resources and sends the, you know, little understanding, and you move forward that little understanding, it becomes a little more clear, and sometimes it takes time, but you know, at least I don't waver from my position of being servant in the mood of trying to be of service to Krishna and his devotees. Yes.
From the yesterday class about the topic of Bahushatma.
Yeah.
So is that Bahushaka, like, I was not saying the Bahushaka that Krishna mentioned is about the devotees, that they shouldn't act in that way? Or it's
Bahushaka refers to the intelligence that becomes many-branched. So let's be a materialist for a moment and think, okay, I've got my weekend in front of me, and I just passed this one before, and I tried out this, that, and the other thing, and the other thing, and it didn't quite work out the way I planned it, so let me plan this one out. Let me go here, be with those people, drive in the countryside, make sure I do my exercise, and have a go to a party, and, you know, put all these things together, and happiness. Ah. I'm anticipating happiness. And I'm going through the weekend, and it doesn't turn out to be the happiness that I thought it would be, so I'm making adjustments, and many branched. Whereas for a devotee, there's one component. Krishna should be pleased. And everything that may happen or may not happen is built around that one component. Very focused. And there's contentment through that focus. And there's intelligence. And empowerment, and, you know, happiness.
So devotee has Bahushaka, but his focus is one.
No, Bahushaka refers to, I have no real shelter. I have to put together, I have to consider so many factors to bring this obscure thing called happiness, sense gratification. And it never happens. So I'm forever engaged in being splayed out over many branched things. But a devotee, if Krishna has given me such an ability to do a variety of things, I can do, and I can be happy doing one thing. If that's what Krishna wants. And I may, we're planning a japa retreat, and so we'll be sitting all day long just doing one thing. And one whose intelligence is many branches is going to get really restless. Impossible. So it's practice to stay focused on that Krishna should be pleased. And my relationship with Krishna is everything. And from that, then, okay, now Krishna is giving me the ability to do this or to do that. And so, like some of our children, they're learning musical instruments that they didn't know before. But the purpose behind it is, ideally, is not to show off, but to serve Krishna. Etc. That's the vyavasayatmika buddhi, and the bahushaka is not, can we deploy it? Rather, behind it, there's for a devotee, there's this one thing. So, I may have this ability, or this capacity, or that faculty. That's not my all in all. My satisfaction is not picking up this faculty or that capacity or that something and using it and getting some satisfaction using it. My happiness is Krishna should be pleased. And if it's appropriate, fine. I'll use it. And if it's not appropriate, fine. That's... my contentment is this one thing. Krishna should be pleased. Then I can deploy or not deploy. One can be in an opulent situation or a most bare and simple situation and be very happy. in either case. A materialist isn't like that. And an impersonalist isn't like that either. But a devotee can be happy in any situation. Provided they can serve Krishna. And actively do something that's for Krishna's pleasure. Whatever that may be. And, you know, minimally, simply chant Krishna's holy name. I mean, so when traveling, I'm in so many situations where these long lines, you know, or anyway, so many things. People get so restless, they get so like wound up and tight, and, you know, screaming and yelling and pushing and. Just, but a devotee is very calm. Okay, this is an opportunity to serve Krishna in this way. What's my, you know, getting all wound up going to do? Nothing. Etc. We're happy just chanting Krishna's holy name. And if something requires some very complex situation, you know, in dealing with it, depending fully on Krishna to act in a way that he'll be pleased. That's our life as devotees. Simplicity, complexity, or in between. Whatever Krishna wants. So we're hands off and we're hands on at the same time. Fully under Krishna's direction. Whatever he wants. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada, Ki Jai.
Jai. Shri Prabhupada, Maharaj. Ki Jai.